Visit our website at BostonBastardBrigade.com for recent news, reviews, podcast episodes, and videos featuring members of the B3 crew.
Become friends with us on MySpace at MySpace.com/BostonBastardBrigade, as well as on Facebook. You can even find our Twitter accounts on our official homepage.
And don't forget to check out our friends at the Electric Sisterhood at ESH.MOBI for another side of news and review, including their own glorious podcast show.
The following is a special Boston Bastard Brigade presentation.
Massachusetts, and we are talking with the drummer and vocalist from the band Blood Red Shoes. They are on tour promoting their new album Fire Like This. This is Steven Ansel. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I pronounced last name right, correct?
You did. Exactly right.
Good. So this is your second time touring America. Now, how have the U.S. roads been treating you compared to the first outing?
The first time, we actually only just came over and did two shows in New York.
Really?
So it doesn't really count. So this is our first tour, really. So far, it's been pretty kind of up and down from one night to the next. Some amazing shows and some pretty difficult shows.
Has it been everything that you thought it would be here in America?
It was better than I thought it was going to be. Because we were very aware that we were starting from zero in the States. We didn't have a record out. We never toured. Nobody really knows us. And we had very little expectations of anybody showing up or, you know, any of the venues giving a shit or treating us nicely. Or we just kind of expected everyone not to care. But actually, every night we've been surprised by how many people of either the turnout or how nice the venue's been, or just the fact that people fucking know who we are.
Yeah.
It's been really cool. Like, without exception, there's been at least 30 people in each town, and a bunch of those will be checking us out like for their first time, but there'll be 10-15 people who know us and know the songs, and that's really cool.
Yeah,
in towns we've never been to ever.
Because I know you're sometimes used to playing in crowds like almost 30,000 people.
Well, yeah, we've only done that a few times, but yeah, I mean, in most countries, apart from, yeah, here, well, the smallest places we're doing is 500, and the biggest is sort of 1500.
Oh, okay.
Festivals, you can do anything from like 10,000 to 30,000, but that's festivals,
oh, yeah.
They're not just there for you. But yeah, so coming here, it's been a while since we've played clubs as small as this venue or anywhere else. It's been cool, because it's like, it's good to keep yourself in check, you know? If you can't throw down in a small place, then you kind of have no right to be able to play a big place.
Correct.
Is the way we look at it.
That's good, thank you.
It's been a good way to keep us in touch and keep our feet on the ground, you know?
Correct. Now, where and how did Blood Red Shoes come to be?
It came together between London and Brighton in the UK, where we both lived. And then we both had bands previously that in the same punk scene, basically. And the punk scene in England's really small. Yeah, we knew each other's bands, and we were playing the same kind of scenes in like the DIY punk scene in England. And both our bands came to a close for various reasons. And yeah. Laura just emailed me, actually, and just said, hey, do you want to just have a jam? Because we're both got some free time. And I said, yeah, and then we jammed, and we started writing songs immediately. We just had this chemistry, and things just came out, and that was a pretty good sign, so we just went with it from there, and this is what came out of it.
Cool.
It's Blood Red Shoes.
Now, how do you feel the Blood Red feel?
Get it right.
How do you feel the band differs from Lady Muck in Cadillac Fall?
It's a lot poppier. Our old bands were a lot less commercial. I mean, it's not like our band is really, really pop. Like, we're not Lady Gaga, but certainly the music is quite in keeping with our previous bands. Like, it's quite aggressive, guitar-based kind of, you know, it's got a lot of a punk attitude to it. But I think vocally, the melodies were something that in our old bands, we didn't really, there wasn't a great deal of vocal melody. It was kind of screamy, shouty. And this band, we write choruses, basically, and we didn't in our last bands. And that was something that came out naturally when we started writing together, so we both brought out this kind of pop instinct in each other, but it's still glued to the fact that all our favourite music's, you know,
yeah,
comes from the punk or alternative rock scene.
Now, you've been following kind of a trend of many bands that have been two pieces. Bands like the Black Keys, Dresden Dolls, White Stripes, Hot Rats.
Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, Lightning Bolt.
That's my favorite two piece.
But we gotta know, why no bassist?
That's just the fluke of how it started. When we started, we had every intention of getting another guitar player and a bass player. But we started writing these songs, and we ended up writing them so fast that we came upon a way of working together that didn't allow space for another person to join in on that. And it wasn't so much a decision based on the sound of it or the sonic thing of we wanted to have no bass. It was just the chemistry of writing and playing together worked. And once we'd established it, and it happened really fast, we didn't want to fuck with it. We were scared to fuck with it. And we just went, you know what, we'll be all right. We can get some low end, just turn the bass up on the amp, and we'll be all right. And we honed the sound a bit to try and make it sound as full as possible. But yeah, there was no intention to be minimal at all. It was just, the crucial thing, I think, is if you click with somebody, that's more important. You can have 15 people on stage, and it might sound cool, but if the chemistry isn't right, it's pointless, isn't it? So we just stuck with the chemistry and didn't invite anyone else to join.
It's an exclusive band.
Yeah.
Nobody else allowed it.
It's a private members club. Two people.
You got matching jackets and everything.
Not really.
Now, you mentioned Lightning Bolt. What other bands have inspired you greatly?
Bands that really inspire us, things, a lot of old stuff like Zeppelin and Sabbath, Rolling Stones, The Who, but then more recent stuff, we're quite a lot kind of obsessed with the 90s American like alternative rock and punk sound. Like, we love stuff like Babes in Toyland, Sonic Youth, Nirvana, and Foo Fighters as well, actually. And then like Caius, Queens of the Stone Age, Bikini Kill. And then we do like English stuff too, but it's mostly what we listen to is American bands. We're both a big hero for both of us is PJ Harvey. Like, big hero for us.
I've heard some of the Desert Session stuff she done with Josh Harvey.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah. Actually, that song on their recent album came from a Desert Session up.
You just released Fire Like This over in the UK back in March.
Yeah.
I know it's been on iTunes, and I know it just got a physical release over here in America.
It just came out here, 2 weeks ago or something. Yeah.
Right. Now, how do you feel how it differs from, say, Box of Secrets from the first album?
I think it's truer to who we are. I think it's just truer to us.
Mm-hmm.
I think we got closer to capturing what I would call our real identity on a recording. It's the first one, you know, we were new to making an album. Well, certainly we'd made recordings before, but in a DIY scene on a really tiny budget. It's the first time we had, you know, a producer and a big studio, and we had 4 weeks to make it and all this stuff that we'd never had before. And that was a really new environment for us. And because of that, I think some of our ideas got lost along the way. And whereas I do really like the first record, but we saw a lot of flaws in it, but we were very keen to fix on the second album. And the second album, I think, reflects who we are and what we sound like live a lot better than the first record. I think it's heavier, it's darker, it's more of a rock record than the first one. Kind of, we got called like an indie band in England, which I fucking hate indie bands. So like, I hate it when people say that. And I think, yeah, the second one to me is like, that sounds like who I think we are. And a lot of people have seen us live a lot said it sounds a lot closer to our live shows.
So it's a lot more personal to you.
Yeah, and also I think the record is supposed to sound emotionally more personal to the audience, because on the first record we were putting like double track, triple track vocals, and something about that isn't as personal as when you hear one voice singing to you. You know, when you hear a record with loads of it, it's kind of putting this distance, this kind of studio trick between you and the listener. And with this record, we wanted it to sound like someone was singing right in front of you, like, I'm here spilling my heart out, and it make it that much more engaging, you know?
Yes.
And that's, I'm not the person to say whether it worked or not, but I hope it worked.
Yeah, and it really did. It's probably one of the best albums to come out this year, so.
Oh, thanks, man.
It's great.
This is where it gets loud, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should we move somewhere?
Yeah, maybe. Should we move outside? Yeah, step outside. All right, we are taking the show on the road.
Yeah. Now, I heard that you guys had like a big issue with the release of Box of Vicious, preferably the fact that, because of the fact that it actually got leaked online. So what did you guys do in order to avoid something like that to happen?
Well, yeah, there was a lot of shit with the first record. Part of the reason it leaked so far ahead of release was because there was a label buyout. The label we signed to got bought, and because of that, they reshuffled the release by 3 months. By which point, everybody already had like promotional copies and that, so it inevitably was going to leak. So our frustration was not so much that it leaked; it was more to do with the fact that it had got put back and not come out in where we wanted during a tour that we wanted, and with a load of momentum, it kind of went all messy, and that just pissed us off overall.
Yeah.
So this album, we were just much more organized. There wasn't any like label changes or anything stupid like that, so it kind of went to plan. And then in order to try and stop people from hearing it early, we thought, well, look, people, once you've recorded a record and it's been pressed, it's going to find its way out, you know, before the release date. So we thought a cool way to do it and to make it so that we're in control of how people are presented with it was that we did, each week leading up to the record, we put a new track on our website that you could stream and listen to completely for free.
Right.
So for 10 weeks leading up to the release, each week there was another one, and every time we put it out with a new piece of artwork, and we did it in a different order to the album, so we thought it would be like an interesting listen when people got it in the right order.
Yes.
And that way, what it did was, instead of people just finding out in amongst other bands, like a BitTorrent or something, they were coming to our website, seeing where we were playing, and they were hearing it with the context and artwork and at least an aesthetic that we were in control of. So it felt a lot more comfortable for us, for sure.
And that's a really good idea, because it lets people hear the music, but then, you know,
it also keeps people's attention on you rather than just finding it on a faceless internet site or, you know, like a link from a blog.
Yeah.
It actually keeps people can see where we're playing, they can see, you know, I don't know, what we look like on a website and get a feel, because, you know, we made our own website. All the artwork is done by Laura Mary for everything released, and that aesthetic is part of what we do.
Yeah, because I read that you guys are hands-on with everything, from the music to
as much as we can be.
Is it tough to do something like that, or do you find it wicked easy?
No, it's really hard. It gets harder and harder every day, because as the band grows, it's harder, and as we play more countries, like, you're constantly on the road, you're trying to keep tabs on who's doing what for you everywhere, and it gets fucking hard. And you do have to, at some point, you have to draw a line and go, okay, look, I'm not going to be able to control everything, but I have to trust some people to do it for me on certain things. We never give over, certainly we never give over the control of the artwork for anything, or give over the control of, you know, who chose our, I don't know, producer or how the record was mixed.
Yeah.
But certain other things, you end up going, okay, we just need to leave that because we can't.
We can't change it.
There's
it's
not enough
who you
hours
are.
In the day.
Yeah.
But we are definitely control freaks. It's a hard habit to kick.
It's understandable, because you want your product to be shown the way that you are picturing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's art, man. If somebody else is mediating your art, then it reaches the public. I always see it like Van Gogh didn't go hang his painting in a room and then turn all the lights off. He had a certain way that he wanted people to see it. And we have a certain way that we want people to understand our band and relate to our band and hear our music. And if somebody else is in control of that, you've lost some of your identity and you've lost some of the truth of what you're saying.
It's pretty understandable, because
and it happens to a lot of bands as standard, because that's what the record industry does, is misrepresent bands.
Yeah, I mean, feel like with a band like U2, they've kind of lost a lot of their like Irish background pride sort of thing in their music.
Yeah, they're just they've got so big they're not really humans anymore, are they? They're just this kind of gods floating in space with that huge reverb.
Oh, wow. Now, you mentioning about people coming to show, you're surprised at how they knew about. I think one of the big reasons why people are starting to know about you is because one of your songs, It's Getting Boring by the Sea, was featured in a movie, Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, now, that is true.
Now, were you shocked by the fact that Edgar White is a huge fan of you?
No, because we already knew. Because he came to a lot of shows and he wangled his way backstage and came and said hi to us. So we met him a couple of times. So it wasn't like a complete shock that we were on it. It made sense because we'd met him, we knew he was really into the music. Mm-hmm. We at no point actually thought he was going to put us in a film. Like, he just came backstage and was like, I really like you guys. And we were like, oh, you directed Spaced, which is this great series that we were both really into. And he never like dropped any hints that we were going to, you know, that he was going to try and put us in. And then when he did his new film, I think he just saw his chance to put some bands that he likes in it, and we were one of them, and we were like, dude, thanks, you know, you're a legend. It's been really cool for us, though.
Now, how did you feel the scene that featured your song best represented your music? Did it look cool to you? Or
it just felt, I wouldn't say maybe specifically the scene it was in, but I just thought it's the kind of film that I'm in personally, I would have gone to see. And it's the kind of film, the connections with the whole, the kind of comic book world and the way that there's bounce in it and the connection to the punk scene and the jokes about like vegan police. And that, you know, that kind of scene is very much the scene we come from in Brighton. So actually for us, it felt really right. It felt like it was totally connected to that world.
So you felt Scott Pilgrim told the story of Brighton in some way?
Well, not the story of Brighton, but the scene that represents that's going on in Canada in that film isn't a million miles from what it's like in Brighton. You know, everybody's like, you're fucking sellouts, or, you know, they've come from that kind of underground mentality. And
yeah.
That definitely ties to the roots of our bands, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. We're blown away by the fact that you can both play the drums and sing at the same time. Not a lot of people can do that.
Dude, if Phil Collins can do it, fucking anyone can do it, surely. You guys are a complete moron.
What? Okay, I'll agree with you on that. I mean, seriously, have you heard that shit that he wrote for the Tarzan movie?
No.
You're lucky.
I just said, like, the obvious Phil Collins stuff.
How hard was it for you to do something like that, or was it just easy?
No, it wasn't easy. It took a while, but it's not really complicated. It's like anything else. You just got to practice it. Like, I wasn't very good at first, and then it got better as we played more and we rehearsed more. And then, you know, I played guitar and sang in a band before this. Mm-hmm. If you can do that, then it's only coordinating. I mean, that's using your hands and your mouth. Then you just got to coordinate your legs as well, and then your drumming and singing. So it's just practice, man. It's not, you know, if you can drive, you can probably, if you can drive and talk to someone on the phone, then you can probably play drums and sing. But you just got to try it. You know, you just got to practice it.
So basically, any 17-year-old American girl
can do my job. You should delete that bit, because otherwise I might get fired.
How can you get fired from your own band?
So it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? And they do as well. They're texting driving.
Oh,
that's the one. I see that.
It became illegal, so.
Yeah, it doesn't mean they've stopped doing it, man. No. I've seen a lot of that. So I saw a guy today with no hands on a motorbike texting on the fucking freeway.
Welcome to America.
For real. We were all looking out the van like, this guy's fucking insane. A motorbike.
Hey, you want to see something funny?
Yeah, like watching him fall on his face.
Oh, man.
Now, you've traveled and played in many parts of the world, from here and Europe to Japan and Australia. What country has managed to take your breath away the most?
Japan, without a doubt. It's the most, for like a variety of reasons, but the initial shock when you first get off the plane and walk out into Japan is so fucking different to anywhere I've been before.
Mm.
And that effect lasts with you. Like, we've been there 6 times, and every time I go over, it still makes me go, wow.
Yeah.
And it's like, it looks different, it smells different, the whole culture is different, the way people treat you is different, the show's different. It was just so different.
I've been there before, and I totally know what you're talking about. I was like, oh, I can't wait to get back over there.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful country, and I think I've never been really outside of the major cities, but that it just has an atmosphere to it that's unlike anywhere I've been. And I loved a lot of places that we've been on tour, but mm-hmm. Tokyo is the one that when you see it on the tour, you're like, I can't wait till we get back to Tokyo or get back to Osaka.
Mm. If you ever get a chance to sightsee, there's a great shrine area in Nikko. It's like shrines that have been around for over 1,500 years and look like they've been built just a few months ago.
We never get that much time, but we made a few trips out. We went out to like that giant Buddha, the big bronze Buddha that they built, and a few things like that were cool.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the music scene over there?
In Japan?
Yeah.
Not really, actually. I know a few Japanese bands that are kind of in the realm of music that I listen to, but I don't think they're that big in Japan, actually.
Well, I'm pretty sure you might know of Guitar Wolf, because Lightning Bolt has covered them.
Yeah, I know Guitar Wolf, I know The Boredoms, Melt Banana, bands like that, but actually in Japan, they're not that famous. J-pop is the big thing. And
well, that's the
I don't
thing.
Know any of that.
Everything is considered J-pop. If you're from Japan and you're a musician, J-pop, it's J-pop.
Definitely the word pop doesn't belong anywhere near a Boredoms record.
Sure. I know. Beef or Boredoms is just like one of the most hardcore tracks out there.
I love that band, the Boredoms.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Now, after this US tour, what else do you and Laura have planned?
This tour, we finish in Chicago on this tour. We fly home, we have like 2 days. Mm-hmm. Then we go a European tour until the middle of December. And then after that, we were toying with going back on the road early next year, but we actually just cancelled that a few weeks ago, because we're starting to jam loads of new ideas in sound checks, and we want to get all those ideas down and start writing the next record and recording it, so before we forget them, or you know, or before the magic of those songs goes.
So at least like try to do some demos of them before.
Yeah. So we decided not to tour early next year. We're just going to concentrate on writing.
And that's a good idea.
Yeah, I think it is. We've played so much this year. I don't want to get to that point where you start to hate the songs and you play them to people, because it's bullshit, isn't it? So
yeah.
You want to get the new stuff while we've actually got the impetus to do it.
It'd be like Da Vinci saying, "I hate my Mona Lisa."
Yeah. And bands do it. It's very easy to fall into that. We started to get there when we were touring the first record, to the point where we were resenting playing songs. And I don't want to do that again.
Yeah, understandable. Now, the last thing that we'd like to do, you're going to be the first artist that we do this with, and one of our other B3 members did suggested this. Three album island. It's like, if you were stuck on a deserted island, which three albums would you bring with you and why?
Okay, I would bring PJ Harvey, Rid of Me, because I don't know, it's just, there's no other reason beyond that. It's just an incredible record, and it's one of those records that I've probably liked for about 10 years, and regardless of the different phases of of what I've been into, it's always stayed with me as a record that I find really engaging emotionally. So I guess wherever even if I was stranded on an island, I'd feel like I had a friend because I had that record. Then I'd want, do you know that band Q and Not You?
What's
they're a US band from DC called Q and Not You. They broke up a few years ago. They're on Discord, Fugazi's record label. And their first album's called No Kill, No Beep Beep. And that's also a great record, but it's in a much more kind of aggressive, exciting, off-the-hook way to PJ Harvey. Mm-hmm. So that would be good to kind of get you up in the morning, probably.
Yeah.
And what would be my third record? That's hard. Narrowing it down now. I've only got one left, and there's so many good ones to pick.
I know. I maybe I should have asked you that. Maybe I should have told you about this question beforehand.
Yeah.
I did forget about one question to ask you. Maybe you can think about the albums and ask you about the music video for Heartsink.
Okay,
Because it's a really interesting concept. It feels like the music video is telling about, like, this destroying what hurts you in the past and moving forward to the present. Is that sort of the message that you were trying to
There was actually
get
no specific message for the video. What this is the story of how that video happened was, there's a director called Steve Glacier who is based in Brighton, who we've done a load of videos with. We came to make the video for this, and we hadn't done anything with him for a while. We sat down with him and went, right, we want to make a video where we just smash a load of fucking stuff up, because it would be fun. And it was that dumb and that simple. And he said, okay, cool, well, let's try and do it in an interesting way, so it's not just a mindless destruction. Yeah. And then we just sat in a coffee shop and talked about different ways of doing it, and one of the things we thought was, okay, it would be cool if what we break actually had some sort of sentimental significance, and it was something that you were smashing for a reason, not just for fun.
Yes.
And then we got to the point where, look, it would be really cool if we actually got our fans to participate, because then their story becomes the video, and it's less about us and more about what other people and why they want to break what they've brought. And then we thought it'd be cool to make this, not a documentary, but a little short video on the side, interviewing those people about what they were breaking and why.
Mm.
So it just evolved into that. It didn't start as a decision to do that. It became that. And I kind of like the fact that our fans, and that people flew from different countries to do that, like,
really?
Off their own money to be in that. And they all had some pretty full-on reasons for what they wanted to break. And I really liked that they felt free enough to do that, and that they wanted to put that in as kind of part of our bands. Like, that, they kind of became part of what our band was for that video.
You helped them break the chains in some way, shape, or form.
Well, I don't know if we did that, but it was cool that they felt, you know, open enough to do that and make it part of our band, because that song is about, you know, well, destructive urges, but also it's about disappointment, and it's about being fed up, and it's about wanting for something better and wanting for something to change. And
yes.
That's the emotions that people put into what they brought and broke, and that was, yeah, it was fucking cool.
Yeah,
plus we got to go to this wasteland in London and then just smash stuff and set it on fire, and it was great.
I know, it's a great video. I love the whole slow motion effect, though I feel bad for the person who broke their $300 Xbox.
Yeah, people were breaking loads of stuff, loads of cool stuff, man.
I know. Looked like handmade stuff and everything.
Yeah, there was a lot of people who'd been made and given things by ex-boyfriends and girlfriends, and they really wanted to smash that stuff. They were really, yeah, it was a lot of,
I think we all got that stuff.
A lot of heartbreak went into some of that stuff, man. It was yeah, kind of blew my head off a bit when the people showed up and told us what they brought and why. I was like, fuck. That's deep, you know?
Yeah. But that's an amazing story. It's an amazing backstory, and it's a great video. Now, have you
Thanks.
Thought of your third album yet?
No. Have we thought of it?
Your the Three Album Island game.
Oh, right. I'll go for Queens of the Stone Age.
There we go.
Yes.
Depends what mood I'm in, whether I go for Rated R. Or, yeah, I'm going to go for Rated R, actually.
Quick to the point, Liz.
Yeah. And I really like that song, In the Faith.
Yes.
The one that...
Mark Lanegan
sings. I think Mark Lanegan probably wrote it, actually, but it's a beautiful song.
I think he co-wrote it, yeah.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song. Yeah, I'm going to go for that today.
Excellent.
Today's Desert Island.
Well, Stephen, thank you so much for joining us in the Boston Bass Brigade.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Sorry Laura couldn't make it. She was washing her clothes. I'm sure if you find her later and ask her questions, she'll be happy to tell you.
Okay. And Fire Like This is in stores now all across America and all over the world, if you think about
Correct.
It.
Correct.
So, Stephen, thank you so much. Good luck with tonight's show. And
Thanks.
Rock the fuck out, okay?
Yeah, I can guarantee that.
Joined by the guitarist and vocalist from Blood Red Shoes, Laura Mary Carter. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, we just finished listening to you guys perform, and we are kind of deaf right now.
You are.
So am I. I've been deaf for years now.
I stand above the sound waves. It's a height advantage.
Lucky you.
Yeah, but I bang my head on a lot of things, so it's okay.
So how do you feel about tonight's performance?
Yeah, I had a really good time. Yeah, I don't know what to say. It was fun. I really enjoyed myself.
Now, you have some roots here in Boston, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Well, I have some family that lives here, yeah, who were meant to come tonight, and I don't think they did, which is a shame.
Oh.
Yeah.
Maybe next time.
Next time.
Probably
they're also
lost
in
Boston traffic.
Yeah. Now, I did ask Stephen about this, but I was wondering how you felt this U.S. tour has been going, because I know that you previously performed a couple shows in America, only in New York, but this is your first time touring across the
States. Oh, New York? Ugh.
Yeah, well, we just did like 5 shows in New York, and we've been to, so far on this tour, we've been to Seattle, we went to Canada, we went to Vancouver, we've been to San Francisco, we've been to L.A., mm-hmm. And yeah, it's all been really good. It's been a bit up and down, but I've been really ill in the beginning. The first week I had the worst flu, so...
Yikes.
In a way, it's a good luck for Boston, so I was like literally getting sick before I went on stage. It was pretty horrific. It was hard to have a good time because I was so ill, but I really wanted to be here, and I've been waiting since I was a kid to... tour the States. So.
Yeah, has it been everything you've been thinking it was?
It's a lot more, I mean, I know it's going to be hard work, but it's a little bit more hard work than I thought in terms of, like, traveling. But, no, it's been exactly what I thought, and, God, the breakfasts are great. They're so good.
Oh, they're good.
Yeah, the eggs and the pancakes and the bacon. Like, it's been my favorite thing. Basically, me and Steve are such foodies, like, we're obsessed with food.
Sounds like the breakfast we had on Saturday.
We just had such good food here since we've been here. We just keep stuffing our faces.
So that's what you like about America, is the food?
Yeah, and the scenery, and just, I don't know, it's so different from state to state. That's what I really like about it, I have a difference between, it's just, I don't know, it's almost like countries within a massive country.
Well, New England and Old England, we kind of go hand in hand in some ways.
Yeah, but Boston, in fact, actually... I've never been here, but from what I imagined, it's exactly what I imagined. It is exactly what I thought.
You mean with the accents going, I parked the car, get the manchata.
No, not that, just how it looks. And
so now, have you had a chance to see any of the scenes of Boston yet?
No.
Oh, Sunway Park, no nothing?
No, we just got here. We drove here, I went to Laundrette.
Oh, okay.
And that was it.
Oh, maybe next time.
Next time.
We did ask this to Stephen too. Who are some of the bands that have greatly influenced you?
I'd say the band that's influenced me the most growing up was Babes in Toyland. Pretty much Cat Bielan, the guitarist, was the reason why I play guitar. I love that. Excuse me. Okay. I love bands like L7 and Bikini Kill and Hole and Nirvana and Smashing Pumpkins and My Bloody Valentine and PJ Harvey and Queens of the Stone Age. Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin, and yeah, I don't know. Just like I like checking out music all the time. So, but they're the kind of main bands that I love and I keep going back to. Especially Queens of the Stone Age. I probably listen to them every day.
Now you just released your new album, Fire Like This.
Yeah.
What would you feel, or what do you think is the overall theme to this new album?
The theme, I'm not sure about the theme, but I know compared to our first album, which was just a collection of like singles, this album is a bit more thought through, and the theme was just, I don't know if there was a theme, but it was just to kind of capture how we sound live on record, and that was our main aim, and make it sound kind of a raw and, you know, hardly any effects, hardly any overdubs, hardly any kind of chopping together, you know, like we played in a room together, and that's kind of the takes on the album. We just wanted to make it true to what we sound like live. I don't think there's a feel, but I guess we just thought it through more, and it sounds more like what I imagine our band to be like than our first one.
Although Rocks of Secrets is a great album.
Oh, thanks. Do you know what, I haven't listened to it in years now. I don't like listening to it. But that's just because we made it, I guess.
Now, I want you to tell our listeners about Springtime, because this is like a guitar that I believe only you own.
Yeah.
It's like a custom-made thing, and tell us what makes it different from any other guitar out there.
Well, it's made by a guy called Yuri Lammen, who is he's from Holland, and he used to be a famous comic writer, I guess you could say. And he decided to stop doing that and make guitars. And he's made stuff for like Sonic Youth and Liars and Blonde Redhead and bands like that. And he approached us because we play in Holland a lot. And he wanted to make a guitar for a band that had no bass. And so he, between me and him, we talked over a year. And he came up with this guitar, which is basically based on my guitar, like on a Telecaster. Got a Telecaster neck. But it has like a bass string. Has like, instead of the top E, and then it has like three high E strings that are all tuned in the same tuning, and it's pretty weird. It's got three inputs, so you have to plug into three amps. It sounds like the end of the world.
So it's like Armageddon in a guitar.
Yeah, it's so mental. It's like, I would love to come out and play it, but I need at least another year to try and understand it. I mean, because we've been so busy, it's like I want to spend time and, you know, get to actually, you know it, because it's got such weird tuning and sound. It's, if I started plugging in on stage, it would take me like an hour just to get it set up. So, but I played it on the album.
And because it takes up like three amps, you would think it would need a lot more room too to actually play in a live area.
Yeah. Well, I've got two amps now, like the big one and the small one, so I need another one. And, I mean, I'll probably play it on the next album. But I did play it on the album, but it's just not a focal point, so it's not really, I don't really need to play it live. But it's the prototype, so basically anyone can get that guitar. It's just, it's going to be different to mine, because mine's the original. But I think Placebo own one. And the band called Deus, I think, but I don't know.
Now, I was reading online how you've progressed as a band from playing in someone's apartment to like three people to over 30,000 people.
You guys are amazing. You're great.
And at like rock festivals, did you ever think, like, when you were playing in that small apartment to the tiniest crowd, that you would actually play to just enormous crowds of people, like as big as a small town?
No, I didn't. And when we started the band, we come from like the punk scene in our towns or whatever, and there was at no point that I ever really think that would happen. We were kind of happy to just keep playing, and it was just that we kept playing that we ended up doing that, I don't know, I suppose. We're quite, like, we're not, what's the word? We are really, we set our sights high, you know, like, we want to do that stuff, but it was never, like, we're going to do that. It was just, like, we would like to, and we're quite, you know, we're very dedicated, should we say. But, yeah, no, it's been really fun. I mean, you know, we go and do that, we support a band, or we do a festival, or we play to lots of people in Europe and the UK, but then we can come here and play to, like, I don't know how many people we're here tonight, but it's all different, and it's all just as fun.
Yeah.
It's got a challenge on every level.
So you don't have, like, a preference to big crowds or small crowds?
No. I think it's actually more of a testament to play to small crowds than big crowds, because big crowds, you can make your sound sound massive, and you can, you know, it's just a whole different game, I suppose.
Yeah.
You just have to learn. But I actually find it more intimidating to be playing, like, here tonight.
Really? Well, you've already got the sound. You just played. The way that you guys performed tonight was like arena worthy. I felt like you could just blow away an arena just with the sound that you had in there.
Thanks. That's nice. I think we've looked ridiculous on arena. Me and Steve in the middle with like little dots.
Well, you can just picture the stage and like video screens everywhere and cool visuals and.
We'd feel like idiots walking on the
island. Oh no, it could be worse. It could be Lady Gaga walking around wearing meat.
Yeah, that's true. Oh god, I see. Yeah, that was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah.
We supported Rage Against the Machine, and that was pretty amazing, and that was quite massive, but you know, it wasn't our show, so we got away with it.
You just did like what so many people have ever dreamt of, and be like opening up with Rage Against the Machine. So
yeah, that was one of my dreams. Yeah.
I heard that you had to cancel some shows because you are planning to record some demos for the third album.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we didn't actually. It wasn't publicly booked, if that makes sense. We'd booked them, but provisionally booked the venues, but hadn't. You know, no one had bought tickets yet because it hadn't, like, been publicised, so it was just us saying that we'd rather just start writing new songs and like, finish doing the third album, I suppose. I mean, we might do an EP and then the album, or we might just, if we do well, then we might end up just recording the album pretty soon and getting it out this year, so. Next year, I mean.
Pretty cool. I recommend doing, like, a live EP of some sorts, because you guys just are unbelievable live.
Thanks. I'm not sure.
Now, out of all the places you've performed, because you've performed here in America, you've performed in Europe, in Japan, and
Australia, Canada,
which country have you just been just so awestruck at when you go and perform?
When you perform, I think Japan was unbelievable, to be honest.
See her and Steven, you would both agree.
Exactly.
Yes.
General consensus.
Yeah, really? Okay. Yeah, Japan just blew my mind. The first time we went there, and we've been really lucky and been there 6 times now to play, so I don't know, every time it's just, I find out new stuff about it. It's just so different from anywhere else, so, that I've been, I suppose. I mean, we played, some random places, like, we played in Hong Kong and stuff, but nothing quite beats Japan, I think.
I know. I've been there before, and it's just such an amazing place to be.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Now, our last question is a little game we like to play with artists. You and Steven are the first people to do this.
Okay.
Three album island. If you were stuck on a deserted island, which three albums would you bring and why?
Wow. God, it's so hard. I'm trying to think what I listen to the most. Three albums, okay. Well, it's going to be Queens of Stone Age since I listen to them so much. What album? I'm not sure. Maybe, probably Songs of the... Oh, Rated R, I don't know. Songs of the Deaf, just because... I don't know. It's because my favourite song is on there. But
you think it ain't worth a dollar, but I feel like a millionaire?
Yeah. And after that, My Bloody Valentine, Loveless, probably.
Yeah.
And after that, it would be Q Not You. Fuck is the name of it? Q Not You. I've forgotten the name of the album.
It's okay. But why Q and not you?
Because they don't exist anymore, and they were a great band. And that album, in fact, we're listening to today, it's probably why it's kind of on my mind. Reminds me of a lot of my teenage years. It's called... It's got a line in the sand on it. That's the name of the song. And the album is called... It's yellow. Frank. Speak, speak, beep, 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 beep.
Bang, don't, kill, don't, beep, beep.
Kill, that one.
No kill, no beep, beep.
Yes, that's it. Well done. Yeah, that's a brilliant album.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for joining us at the Boston Bash Brigade. Fire Like This is available in stores all across the world. And I recommend getting it. It's probably one of the best albums of 2010.
Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us.